Montes Rodriguez versus the people. Petitioner may proceed.
May it please the court, counsel. I'm Susan Foreman, and I am here today on behalf of the petitioner Felix Montes. He stands convicted of the crime of criminal impersonation, a class 6 felony. The statute prohibits a person from knowingly assuming a false or fictitious identity or capacity with the intent to unlawfully gain a benefit or to injure or defraud another. The issue today is whether the majority of the panel of the Court of Appeals below interpreted the term false or fictitious identity or capacity in a way that conflicts with court precedent. In this case, the prosecution's theory of the case was a knowing assumption of a false identity. And it's our position that the precedent is clear that the conduct that was shown does not constitute criminal impersonation. The most recent case is one from this court, Alvarado versus the people. And in that case, the court said that a common sense reading is of that phrase is to hold oneself out to a third person or party as being another person when asked who he is. Here, the defendant and his transaction with Hayjack Chevrolet never claimed to be anyone other than Felix Montes. The other case that's clear precedent is People versus Jones. In that case, as in this one, it was pled in the disjunctive. In other words, the complaint alleged that the defendant assumed a false identity or capacity. Yet the court did not consider that a Social Security number was an identity, but said it was merely a piece of identifying information, and ultimately concluded that in that case, when the defendant used a false number on a loan application, but all other identifying information he gave was accurate, did not constitute criminal impersonation. Same is true here. Other than a false Social Security number, all identifying information that was given by Mr. Montes or filled out on his application form was accurate. And that included his address, his employment, his salary, his home ownership.
Remind me, was there another charge that was brought that might cover this better, or is there another statute that would have been better pled that covers this?
There is now an identity theft statute in Colorado, which was not in effect at the time of this case. But even that statute requires that the government proves the defendant knew that the information, the personal information he was using, was assigned to another person. And that is probably what was one of the problems as far as the majority of the panel looked at it, and they're saying, well, there's no evidence he had knowledge of the alleged victim, Ms. Fall, and they tried to get around what seemed to me to be clear precedent of Alvarado and Jones, and they transformed the case from the one that was prosecuted, that of a false identity, into a false capacity case. And even though the government had never argued that basis in the Court of Appeals. And the panel ended up splitting over the meaning of capacity as that case was interpreted and applied in the case of People versus Bauer. And in that Bauer case, the court said that capacity has two common meanings. One is legal qualification, competency, power, or fitness. And another one is the role in which one performs an act. And it held that in this case, by using a false number, the defendant impliedly asserted his power or fitness to obtain the loan and his ability to work legally in this country and thereby repay it. There are many reasons why this is flawed analysis. First of all, it relies upon an implied assertion. In the other capacity cases that the court can look at, Bauer and Gonzalez, they rest on a defendant's overt assertions and assumption of a role. Bauer involved the defendant assuming the role of a licensed attorney and receiving fees not entitled to because his license had been suspended. And Gonzalez, he overtly assumed the role of husband of the complainant to obtain money that was intended for her. It was a money order that he picked up. Now, the dissent is correct in concluding that Bauer equated capacity, actually, with legal status. A law license allows someone to legally practice law, but a social security number does not give a person a legal status they otherwise wouldn't have, except perhaps, the dissent said, as to claiming social security benefits. Under Gonzalez, same Gonzalez case, but what the point I want to make about it now is that this court held that the statute was not overly broad because of subsection E's requirement that the defendant act with the intent to unlawfully gain a benefit. Here, the benefit the defendant received was money to purchase a car, and there is no evidence that he intended never to repay that money. And that, obviously, is the gist of a loan agreement, receiving money with the promise to repay. The statute requires that any assertion of power and fitness has to be false. Yet the defendant had the power and fitness to repay by virtue of his employment and his salary.
Can I interrupt and ask one question there? If rather than the power to repay, what's at issue is the capacity, the ability to get the loan in the first place, and the party making the loan would not give the loan to someone who didn't have a social security number, would you think then that that would be assuming a fictitious capacity?
I don't think that the evidence establishes that.
And if it did, what would you think the answer would be?
I think it depends. I don't think it's determinative under this statute. It might be if the lender thought it was a material misrepresentation. It might be a false statement.
So just representing something about yourself, some data, some piece of information that allows you to do something you would not otherwise be able to do, you don't think would constitute...
Well, that is a legal status. I mean, like saying I have a law license. That enables...
Well, suppose it's just a question of getting a loan. If you couldn't get the loan without a social security number and you falsely purport to have a social security number, have you done something that creates a false status?
I think that's just a hypothetical question because that's not in the record. What the lender did with the social security number is not...
Well, I'd like to try to narrow down what we mean by a false or fictitious capacity. So maybe that's not the situation here. But
well,
it would help me to understand what you think about that in terms of defining what a fictitious capacity is.
I think that what's relevant to this case is not the obtaining a loan, it's the ability to repay the loan. And it's not, and a social security number doesn't give you a legal status to keep your promise to repay the loan. I'm sorry if that doesn't seem like I'm answering.
In a sense you are. I mean, it seems to me what you're saying is simply because I'm misrepresenting something to somebody in order to get a benefit, and I couldn't get that benefit from them without it, that wouldn't amount to falsifying or giving a fictitious capacity. It has to be something more that you're calling a legal capacity.
That's exactly what Jones said. Using a false...
Jones, of course, is not binding authority on us, right?
So, no, I totally realize that. But I think the court, the dissent in this case, not only correctly agreed with Jones, but also differentiated it on the basis that capacity is more of a legal status, and that a Social Security number doesn't give you a legal status you wouldn't otherwise have. So I think it's not particularly pertinent to the inquiry. There's no evidence in this case that the lender, what purpose, if any, it used it for. The finance director did say it had to be on the form. That block had to be filled out, okay? But otherwise, they couldn't submit it. But it's filled out. They submit it. What the lenders did with it, I don't know. If they tried to determine that it was validly Mr. Montez's, they either learned it wasn't and didn't care because of the other information he provided, or they didn't check. And it's too much to assume that somehow he is usurping her credit ability, or that the credit check would have been hers that would have been positive, because her whole complaint, and she testified to this, was that she couldn't get credit, that he got the loan. So I don't think that's really a determinative factor in this case.
Could I ask just one follow-up?
Yes.
The way you answered that, do you think this statute then is only designed to protect someone whose identity is falsely being used, or is it designed to prevent somebody from using a false or using an identity or characteristic about themselves, even though that's not somebody else's, even though it's just totally fictitious?
Well, in the Gonzalez case, this court said there are times where it's okay to use a false name, for instance. And so, but the statute isn't overly broad because it requires, subsection E requires, that it be done with the intent to defraud or to illegally obtain a benefit. Here he obtained money and he repaid it. He obtained a car with the money and it was never repossessed from him. No one was harmed. No one was defrauded. And you're welcome. And if I may save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Okay.
May it please the court, good morning. Alex Reinhardt, registration number 34970, appearing on behalf of the people in this matter. I'd first like to briefly defend the judgment of the Court of Appeals on the grounds on which they affirmed the trial court. And then if it pleased the court, I'd like to engage in a discussion of how, drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the prosecution, the evidence was also sufficient to affirm on the grounds that the defendant assumed a false identity as well. The issue presented to the Court of Appeals and now before this court is whether the evidence is substantial and sufficient to sustain the defendant's conviction for criminal impersonation. The people contend that the judgment of the Court of Appeals should be affirmed. The Court of Appeals correctly concluded that the defendant assumed a false capacity with the intent to unlawfully gain the benefit when he placed a stolen Social Security number on a car loan application in connection with the purchase of a vehicle at a car dealership. As stated by the Court of Appeals, citing to People versus Bauer, one assumes a false capacity by assuming a false legal qualification, power, or fitness. Here, drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the prosecution, the evidence was substantial and sufficient to sustain the verdict that the defendant assumed a false capacity. The finance director at the dealership testified that a social security number is required to obtain a car loan. It is a threshold requirement. Without one, an auto loan may not be given.
Would you tell us why that is and what the facts are, if any, in the record, since, you know, I haven't read it, regarding, you know, was this woman's credit then standing behind the issuance of the loan? And do we use in this society right now the social security numbers through credit bureaus to check all that out?
The testimony by the finance director was that a social security number is required to run a credit check. That was the extent of his testimony on that issue. However, I believe that the jury is allowed to use their common sense in reaching their verdict, and I believe it is a reasonable inference that a social security number, as testified by the finance director, is required and is relied upon to obtain a credit report when approving financing.
Are we really able to assume that? Because I think a lot of the populace, maybe including myself now, think that that information is privileged and credit bureaus can't have that and use it. Is that wrong?
The credit bureaus cannot have a social security number?
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. That they don't use that to...
It is my understanding that a social security number is what is always relied upon by credit bureaus or by any company that extends credit, for example, your credit card company. They have that information, so do your banks and so forth.
But that's not in the record of this case. We're just supposed to assume that.
It's not, and okay. Very candidly, I do recognize that as a weakness. I think that the prosecution would have been better served to present some evidence of the importance of a social security.
I'm sorry, curious about what sort of weakness that is, and I guess what I'd like to ask is, do you think that that the social security number as part of capacity mm-hmm. is dependent upon that information or assumption that social security is necessary for a credit check and that a credit check is necessary for a loan?
Well, that was the evidence in this case. That was the testimony.
That's not my question. My question is that necessary in order for it to be capacity?
Yes, I think that, and it's hard for me not to.
So the testimony of the loan officer that it is required mm-hmm. is not sufficient to establish capacity. Something more than that is necessary, and that's where you go to this other information.
I would contend just the opposite, that the finance director's testimony was that is required, and I think...
So that is sufficient?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
That brings my other question, which is, I'm curious to know whether you think that if Mr. Montes had given correct Social Security information, mm-hmm. but instead had represented his income at $40,000 when it was actually $39,000, and the loan officer testified that $40,000 is necessary for mm-hmm. this loan, would that be capacity as well, this crime have been committed?
If I understand your hypothetical correctly, I would argue yes, because the evidence presented to the jury is that to be capable of obtaining a loan,
so any information that someone gives in order to secure some benefit that the person giving it says is required elevates that information to a capacity.
If that is the evidence before the jury, if someone testifies, you can't do this unless you have, in your example, a $40,000 income, in this case, a social security number, in the case of Valor, an active license. If there is a threshold requirement, if that is the evidence, then yes, I think that is rises to the level of capacity. And if that is falsified, that is assuming a false capacity with the intent to gain a benefit. The people submit that the analysis is that simple that the Court of Appeals engaged in. However, the defendant has attempted to confuse the issue by arguing that the mere use of a social security number is not meant to be impersonation, citing to Jones, which I contend is is in apposite and engaging in unnecessary statutory interpretation. And I'd like to attempt to respond to those arguments. First of all, the Court of Appeals chose to avoid deciding whether the defendant assumed a false identity under Jones. However, I submit that the evidence in this case is also sufficient to affirm on false identity grounds, and I would contend to the extent that Jones even applies that it was wrongly decided. Today, unlike when Jones was decided in 1992, a Social Security number is a form of identity. That has been recognized by the legislature in the identity theft statute. That statute provides that one commits identity theft by knowingly using someone else's, and I'm paraphrasing, personal identifying information with the intent to gain a benefit. Personal identifying information is defined in 18.5901, and that includes a Social Security number.
That's not the charge here, right?
That is not the charge here. However, I believe that that shows that the legislature has recognized that Social Security number is equal to identity in this day and age. And I think that the jury could conclude that drawing on their common experiences. A Social Security number is used ubiquitously in internet commerce. It is also used in the context of obtaining credit. Here, that includes credit cards, things of that nature. It is, I would contend, the most common way to confirm one's identity. As I said before, when I call up my bank or my credit card company and I want to talk to them about my bill, I give them my name, perhaps my address. They say, well, do you know your account number? I say no. And then they say, well, what's your Social Security number? I give that to them. They say, okay, well, now we know we're dealing with Alex Reinhardt, and we know that this is your bill, and so forth. That may or may not have been the intent of...
Sometimes they ask me my mother's maiden name. So I gather from your argument that would also be capacity as well.
Well, now I'm talking about identity. Because if you falsified your mother's maiden name, they might conclude that you were someone else other than Justice Martinez. My point is that I think the jury could reasonably conclude, drawing on their common knowledge, that when someone gives a false or fictitious Social Security number, they are pretending to be someone else. And in this case, the defendant, although stating that he was who he was and that his address was what it was and that he had a job, etc., for the purposes of obtaining credit, he was the victim who has a credit report and who apparently would have been able to obtain a loan according to her Social Security number and the credit report that is attached to it. I'd also like to just briefly address the defendant's argument that other provisions of the statute require the assumption of another persona, for example, assuming to be someone's husband or wife or a bail bondsman or surety. I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but I think the legislature chose the words false or fictitious identity or capacity in part one of the statute, and then in part E provided a catch-all provision with the intent to unlawfully gain a benefit. And I think that is clear, or that language is clear and unambiguous, and that I would contend that this court need not engage in any statutory interpretation as to what the meaning of capacity or identity is based on the remaining provisions of the statute. Capacity is commonly defined and has been commonly defined by a Court of Appeals case and Black's Law Dictionary, and identity has now been defined by the legislature.
Does that mean that it wasn't defined before? I mean, how far back does the statute go? This identity statute, I mean.
Well, I know that Gonzales, I think, was in 1975.
Yeah.
So it's at least prior to that. I can't answer exactly when it was enacted, but it certainly goes back a while. I believe I've covered all of the issues I'd like to cover. If there are no further questions, I would ask that the judgment of the Court of Appeals be affirmed. Thank you.
A few brief points. First of all, counsel made reference to the fact that the Social Security number was stolen. There was no evidence of that. Falls own testimony that she never lost her card, nor was it stolen from her. The detective who arrested Mr. Montez went through his wallet. He was not carrying any kind of fake Social Security card. The defendant, in fact, told the detective it was a fake number. And in the trial, he tried to present evidence that he had access to his niece's Social Security card, and that when you compare the number that he wrote in on the loan application to hers, it's clear that he transposed some of those digits. So it's not like he stole Fall's card, and the government on appeal even conceded that there was no evidence that he even knew of her existence. The other thing is just the simple fact that a Social Security number is not an identity, and I don't think that even if the new statutes are saying that it's an important item of information, they're not saying it's an identity. I mean, after all, we are human beings here. We are not nine-digit numbers. So a Social Security number is not an identity.
Realize that's a debatable statement.
Well, it seems that way anymore. And then the statutory argument I made about the other provisions of the statute, it was not one that said that the other provisions of the statute went to personas. That is not the argument, and that is not the language in the statute. But what the other segments of the statute relate to are roles in which a defendant acts. And that is a definition that was recognized in Bauer. Thank you.
I want to thank both counsel for your arguments. The case stands.